Demir,
yes.
Let's just start where it all began. Describe the first instrument you built as a kid in your dad's shop.
Well, it was a violin. It was square. It was somewhat squarish. I wouldn't say it was a completely square, but one beautiful thing about violin is that, you know, there's hardly any straight lines on an instrument. Everything on a violin is a curvature, a curved line. But, you know, I might have been, oh, I don't know, 11, 12, something like that, maybe even less. I don't remember by now. And I suppose when I was finished, it was not strung to be played, but the response was it was cute in a sense of my, you know, mother tongue. So yeah, I was probably about 11 or 12, and you know, it's a first instrument, and my mom is proud of it. I've been doing better since.
Did you ever get to play it? Anyone ever play it?
No. It's still sitting somewhere in a old house that we used to live back home. So maybe one day I'll get it when I'm, you know, 90 years old or something and take a look at it.
Now, have you sought to teach your own kids that skill of violin making, bring them into the shop?
Oh, yes. I would. Yes. I mean, I tried all the time to encourage that to happen, but it's not happening yet because, you know, they're too interested in their own stuff that they like, such as would be, you know, ballet or karate or Star Wars or something like that. So for now, we're focusing on, you know, some small introductions of, you know, wood cutting or, you know, how to use a saw or how to use a drill or how to use a file. And, you know, that's what I've been working with my son. I call it a shop time where he comes and destroys a piece of wood in my shop. And, you know, we call it a violin making.
Do you see a little bit of you in any of your kids?
Oh, like, I see a lot of me in my kids. I see in every respect. I see, well, they're bright. They're full of questions. They are eager to learn. They are very unhappy when they do not succeed in anything. So that would, I see a lot of me and my wife in my kids. So maybe one of them will become, I mean, I'm not pushing them or anything. Maybe one day they will become a fourth generation violin maker. But if that doesn't happen, you know, it doesn't happen. So I'm not gonna really, you know, push them into doing something they don't like. I would like it to come naturally, you know, kind of, I would like them to want to become violin maker rather than me pushing them into it.
Perfect. Now, you talked about working under Carl Becker, and earlier you talked to me about the quote-unquote Becker way.
Yeah.
How have you incorporated the Becker way into your own work?
A lot. Aspects of it would, well, you know, I guess you can divide that question into two parts. You know, there's the first part is that, I guess that answer into two parts. The first part of that answer is that there is a sort of general sense of responsibility when you're working on, whether you're restoring or making, then Mr. Becker, Carl, and his children. He's got a wonderful daughter, Jennifer, and he's got a son who is also a violin maker and so forth. So, you know, their way of thinking is that there is no skipping steps. There is no cutting corners. Like, you got to do everything. You got to do everything the right way. You got to do everything to the customer that you would do to your own violin. Take your time. Do it right. Find out the best, the most quality way to execute things. So that kind of mindset is that, you know, you as a student have ingrained in your mind, and you have to employ it, you know, in everything that you do regarding violence. The second part of the answer to your question is that, you know, he had ways of thinking about, you know, how to graduate the violins, you know, what do you do with arching, and how does the sound changes when you you know, do certain things to an arching, which is called the curvature of the violin, you know, whether you take a little bit more here or take a little bit less here, and how smooth versus how bumpy, you know, and you know, a lot of sort of arching related concerns and secrets were employed with him. A lot of measurements and, you know, jig making to make sure everything is correct in the right place. A lot of symmetry, a lot of, you know, sort of like a measure 10 times and cut only once strategy to everything. So, you know, you as a student, you kind of pick up on that, and you, you know, you try to not only please your teacher, but, you know, you kind of take that later on with you in your work. And, you know, the more you do it, the better you become. So you actually have to check only twice and cut once, mm-hmm. you know, rather than 10 times. So, you know, those are kind of like the treats that I would like to, you know, take from Mr. Becker. And, perfection, always stream for perfection, whether you're working on a very simple project or extremely complicated project, always try the very best you can. And, you know, don't cheat yourself, don't cheat the customers, for sure. You know, it's one thing to cheat on customers, it's a different thing to cheat on yourself. You know, you always have to put yourself on a challenge and, you know, do the best you can. You know, if you're making a violin versus if you're playing a violin, you always have to thrive for the very best sound, the very best performance you can have when you're playing. Same thing happens with making, you know. I mean, yeah, you're going to make mistakes. It's only human. But you're also, if you try your hardest, you know, if you try at 150%, you're likely to get to 80% product. So mm-hmm. I hope that makes sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel any pressure to carry on the legacy of Carl and your father?
No, I feel pressure to do the best I can. I want to carry the legacy of my own, of Demir Horvat. You know, I will never be Carl Becker. I'll never be my father. You know, you as a student, you don't want to be like your teacher. You want to be better than your teacher. Your teacher is there to give you the ingredients how to succeed. And you have to find a way to work your way to the point where you're better. What does it mean to be better in violin making? It's not necessarily making a prettier or cleaner instrument. It's, you know, it has so many levels. It's, you know, it can be how fast you work. You know, I mean, you know, for example, Mr. Becker was extremely good in what he did, but he was also quite slow. He took time to think about everything. I am more on the side of a, you know, sushi chef style. Like I work extremely fast and try to do extremely well while doing things fast. And that in itself is a skill. It's a quality, and, you know, it helps me establish my reputation better. It helps me do better as far as the finances, you know. And if you can rehair 12 bows in a day or cut 10 bridges in a day, sure, why leave it for next month when you can do everything in a day and do it well? So I'm not saying that I'm doing all the time that kind of volume all the time, but my point is that, you know, rather than take 5 cuts with a knife, you know, you can learn how to make a 1 large cut and be done with that part of the job. So efficiency, you know, you work smart, not harder, smarter.
And yeah. Last question, you talked about how your wife checks your instruments when they're done. You've told me that before.
Yeah, I mean, she had him playing, she had him in a shredder.
And what goes through your head when she says, no, that's not good enough?
Oh, that's interesting. What goes through my head? Well, I look for ways to improve it. You know, okay, so you just made something, and, you know, it's not just her. I mean, you know, you make a violin or viola or something, you send it out with the customers, and, you know, they like it, they play it for a week, and, you know, sometimes they buy it, sometimes they're, oh my God, this is great, this is exactly what I was looking for. And sometimes they just return it. Sometimes, they, you know, it's not what I was looking for. You know, and you have an option of getting angry, you know, I mean, why did this happen? I mean, who are they to tell me this, you know, this is a bad instrument? Or you just simply learn from it and you say, well, okay, I mean, it's not great. I made something and it's not that great. How can I improve it? You can always improve everything. You can always either fix or completely improve from A to Z, whether it's a complete overhaul or varnish or work internals or the setup or something, you know, or you simply start, you know, from the clean slate. You start again, the whole process. I mean, as a maker, you don't make something and sit on it for 10 years and, you know, really love what you did and, you know, cherish that memory of making a viola. You know, you want to make things, you know. My teachers, my father, my, you know, Carl, other teachers that I've had in my life tell you, you know, don't worry about making one instrument a year. Try to make one violin every 2 weeks, every month or something. You know, do the as much as you can, the best you can. That's how you get better. That's how you get people to like your stuff. You know, you can't make one instrument and accept everybody's going to like it. You know, you can make 20 instruments and, you know, a big majority of that somebody will like. So, you know, you got to be realistic. You can't be a diva. You got to be a, what's called a working luthier. The one that always keeps on working and producing, and somebody likes it, somebody doesn't. You know, life goes on.